Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
The celebration is on. It's still theirs until someone rips it out of their hands.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast alongside Chris Rosenthal. I'm your host, Kevin Brown, for Inside Lacrosse. And Rosie, we've got a special guest on this week four edition of the Happy Hour Podcast. The new assist king, we can finally say it, Rob Pinnell. Welcome back, recurring PLL Happy Hour Podcast guest.
Always great to be on here with you guys. How we doing?
Better now, man. Congrats on the record. Appreciate you joining, as usual. Nice little 1-1 split, as has been the trend for these homecoming doubleheaders this season. Just, Rob, how you feeling after this grueling heat weekend in at Homewood?
It feels good. I mean, definitely happy that we were able to come away with that game on Sunday. A lot of times in the 1-1 split, usually you win the first one, lose the second one. And definitely was hotter on Sunday, being going from the night game to the day game. But an old man like me loves the heat. I mean, my muscles are tight, right? So the looser I can be with the heat, the better it is. So honestly, it was...
Wow, that's a good way to think about it.
It was nice out there because, like, I'm dealing with some things. And as soon as they heat up and warm up, they're staying warm. And you don't really... It's actually better for me. So, listen, we lost on Saturday, and we knew that our backs were against the wall a little bit. To go 1-4 would have been really, really tough. And then to win the fashion that we did, to now have goal differential of +12 currently is huge. And a lot of times it will come down to that. You know, that those playoffs rankings will come down to goal differential. So feel good, happy to have a little bit of a break here. But excited that we were able to, you know, go 1-1 that game on Sunday.
So getting back to that, like the Homewood atmosphere for you, you saying it was like a sauna, but like in a good way?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, atmosphere on Saturday was amazing. You know, I think the night game definitely had a better crowd at it, rightfully so, right? Saturday night, it was a little cooler. Boston versus Maryland. and then it was playing at Homewood anytime is a great vibe and great fans.
Is my dog?
I don't know what she's doing. It's always a good it's always great. But yes, Chris, it was a sauna. And it was a sauna in a good way. I mean, I don't think I've ever sweat so much in a game. Guys, after the game, I mean, you needed to basically sit still for like 45 minutes before you even thought about showering. Otherwise, you just start sweating. But it was good. I mean, every team was dealing with it, and all the guys were talking about it. But it is what it is.
We're now 296 and counting assist for the new Apples record holder, Rob Pinnell, here joining us. Rob, just, you know, it was a very vintage kind of splitting kind of both ways from X, and all of a sudden you're thrown across your body. Just, again, it's obviously not the result you wanted, but just the kind of size up, especially after the fact that, you know, you guys were able to bounce back and have the largest regular season win in league history. So, now that you're able to put in perspective a little more, just what this whole kind of, you know, in your 13th season here, whole record kind of means to you.
Yeah, no, I think I probably would decline this invite to the podcast had we lost on Sunday. So
definitely
understandable. Definitely a different feeling, right? That we won, you can enjoy that a little bit more. Honestly, I said it in my press conference, and I was a little annoyed after the game because we did lose, and it was a big game. But I am kind of glad that it's over and we can stop talking about it. I am just focused on winning, and I'm very proud of it. But at the same time, right now, with where our team's at, with where I'm at in my career, I just want to win games. And you know, I'm sure now they're going to be talking about 300 assists. So hopefully we can just get that over as soon as possible. It's cool. I did a little reflecting. I think when I retire, I'll officially be able to look back on some of these things and really think about it. Now I'm definitely kind of more forward thinking. But to think about my first assist and to see some videos going around, I always joke with Pfizer about it. I'm like, that was the easiest assist of my life. Because I just turned and I always stay to it. And then I saw it and see it again. I'm like, it really was. Like, it was just, I literally just like threw it. It's so casual. And he scored. So it's just the, just over the last few days, just kind of thinking about that list came out of kind of who I had the most assists to. And I'm like, well, there's a lot more there. So like, who else, you know, just kind of thinking of some of the guys that I was passing to over the years. How many guys had one or two or, guys like Kyle Hartzell over the top or, Ned Crotty or, just a lot of guys that it's cool to think about. And obviously the pass is half the battle. It's got to go on the net. So, shout out to all those people and players on the other end of the passes. So, I'm proud of it. I am happy that we can move on from it.
No, absolutely. It's good motivation when you're just racking up all these milestones. You're like, oh, I got to throw four of these this next game to 300. It's like, excuse me. No, man. But you're bringing up all the kind of past videos circling around. Want to play a quick rapid fire game with you, if you'll indulge us. I want to see yes or no answers only.
Okay.
For your Rob.
Oh, wow.
And
nice. That's easy. I think
easy enough. One word answer. Going to be rapid fire. Rosie and I will kind of interchange and throw at you some old teammate names, and you will tell us if you have thrown an assist to them in your professional career. Now there's a little bit of stat kind of discrepancies with a couple seasons. So if there's a very small chance that maybe this season you threw an assist to maybe this lizard or this redwood.
But
anyway, I'll start you off with a cupcake, an easy one, and then we'll go to Rosie. Rob Pinnell, have you assisted Matt Brando?
Yes.
All right. Good start. We see how the game goes. All right, we're good. How about Brian Tevlin?
Wow. I'm going to say yes. Yes, I know the assist too. I know the pass. It was in Denver. Yeah.
Yes, sir. We're in there in post-production.
Yeah, that was a good one, though. That's a good one.
LB post-production for sure. And, I was about to interject, hey, only rapid fire, but if you're going to throw out some photocopy memory at us, we will accept. Matt Landis.
I'm going to say no. Matt Landis and I did get into a fight on the field when we weren't teammates, though. That mean we were teammates. So it was all good after that.
Did you reminisce about the fight when you were a teammate?
We did. It was the first practice. Guys, like, just awkward. You guys are right. No. He's a great teammate. Obviously, serving our country. Amazing, amazing individual.
Nice. All right. I'm sticking with the Bryans. Brian Costabile.
No.
First one wrong.
In the bubble?
You have assisted
Deep, but like I said,
the Basta. Your Atlas days, of course. Another Atlas.
Was he rookie in the bubble?
Yeah, I think that was his first year.
I just forget that bubble team. That was not a
game. A lot of people try to that Atlas bubble. John Crawley.
He was on the, I'm going to say no again. He was on the bubble team, though.
Incorrect. So you have assisted John Crawley.
Wow. In the bubble. Oh, you two butthole stumpers right there.
All right. So you're what? Three for five? Three for five.
All right. John
Speck. These are all those singles I was talking about. Like, these guys. This is, it's fun to think about.
It's only getting harder.
Yeah, it is going to get harder.
Just ramp it up a little bit. John Sexton?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Well done.
I've assisted him on a two-pointer.
You have?
Yeah.
What about Mr. Joe Fletcher?
No.
Correct?
All right.
I don't think Fletch crossed the midfield line much.
5 for 7. 5 for 7.
Jeff Ray.
Yes.
Correct. What about Troy Ray?
No.
Correct.
Heating up here.
9.
Kevin Unterstein.
And I love KU. Yes, I've had to assist him on a goal.
Yep, that's correct. And another D-Mitty, Steve DiNapoli.
I'm going to say yes.
Correct. He's hot.
He's on a flow, yes.
All right.
Great.
That's still fun to play with.
Craig Ramian.
Oh, I'm saying no. He was usually running down the faceoff, throwing it to me. I don't think I ever threw it back to him.
You don't think there was ever a give and go in there, maybe? Gotta end off with a correct answer here.
I'm gonna go no.
Well done, Rob. You ran the table. Two early blunders, but you picked it up late. Very well done. Nah, man, it's so it kind of underscores, you know, you've assisted more people than not. So
I would love to see the full list. That'd be funny, fun to see. There's probably a couple of funny ones on there. It's got to be from the Lizards.
It has to be, yeah. No, I wanted to ask you, though, like, we'll stop talking about the record and everything. We will move on to the rest of this season and kind of your move to Maryland here and the Whip Stakes as a whole. Just, but Rob, you passing Ryan Boyle, both of you being kind of Ivy League legends, quarterbacks of offenses, just did you kind of study his game growing up and maybe not growing up, but like coming up through the ranks and take anything from his kind of passing acumen?
Absolutely. I mean, growing up, Princeton was always on TV for the Final Four, right? So those are some of the few games you get to watch a year back when lacrosse really wasn't on TV that much. So just watching the way he was the quarterback behind the goal. And the one thing about Ryan is he always played with his head up. And that was always a constant emphasis of mine. And my dad, as he watched and we watched together, he'd always be like, you got to play with your head up. Whenever you're moving, your head always has to be up, seeing the field, seeing who's in front of you, seeing where your teammates are going to be. So I think that was one thing. And then just kind of his ability to spot feed and be able to anticipate where teammates are going to be. I think part of it is being watching someone do that. And then part of it, I think, is kind of you have that skill. It's definitely tough to do. So, no. And then obviously what he's done in the pros and to take his game from college to the pros and be able to just do what he does. It's obviously humbling to be mentioned in the same sentence as him. And it's cool. I was hoping he would be on the call for it, but he wasn't. So,
You just mentioned, watching an Ivy League team in the Final Four. I see the apparel you got on there, a little big red. What was this ex Memorial Day like for you?
These are the Cornell Teagles. This is what we work out in every day and wear under for practice. Although I think they maybe I'm big Navy now, they're a little spoiled. I think they say Cornell lacrosse now for the current team. This is the old school university issued. So you said what was your thoughts on the team?
Yeah, what was it like just being a fan for the whole thing?
It was amazing. I mean, I think you guys are kind of aware of Cornell lacrosse and just the tight alumni group that we have, and it's really special. And obviously the history with George and Eamon and so many alum that sacrificed their lives to allow us to have the opportunity to do what we do and represent everything that we're about with Cornell. And being on the team in 09 and, being an alumni ever since, having come so close, and then 22, I just felt like this team was meant to be, and especially with Connor leading the way. I mean, he's unbelievable. You see his post-game press conference or his post-game interview We were just with him last week, a bunch of alumni talking about just the future and, you know, what can we do to help. And he's just so impressive when he's speaking to a group of alumni, let alone when he's leading a group of young men. So, like, it really, obviously, CJ Chris is amazing. That senior class as a whole, 16 seniors or 15 seniors, whatever it was, such a big class. And I think more than any other class that I've seen in recent history of Cornell, they were on the same page. They all were bought in, playing the right way, just displaying what Cornell lacrosse is all about. And, you know, you talk to them, they all are on the same page. And that's so important, because when you have those teams on the same page, that just kind of goes throughout the entire team. And there's no divide. There's no mixed messages. There's no guy thinks things should be done this way or that way. It's like, no, this is how we're going to do things. And that's how they did them. And it was the most complete team, I think, that Cornell's ever had. I was hesitant early in the season when everybody was getting really excited. And I was like, let's relax here. It's March. And then when I started to really watch more and more and see how they handled being down in game. And honestly, if it wasn't that Penn State game and the penalty, I believe everything happens for a reason. It would have definitely put pressure on them to stay undefeated and whatnot. And, but it could have been a really special season. But I think that game was a blessing in disguise to really sharpen them towards the end of games and make sure that they don't give up a lead like that again. And a lot of times, actually, it'll come up from behind. So, but they closed out Maryland, and it was just fantastic. I mean, watching in a dorm room in Albany was exactly what I envisioned.
It's cool, like the running into you after the Richmond game. Like, it just shows like the alumni travel well for the Big Red. So it was nice to see that support, and just, you know, like Connor Busick evoking that 09 championship. Obviously, one of the most epic national championship games the sport has ever seen. Just the kind of aftermath with that, just to get back to that point, and obviously the work that and he's done as head coach, and, you know, just for it to happen 21 years after George Boyardi's death, and, you know, he wore 21. Just there was just a lot of destiny vibes with this team, and kind of like you said, just like it was just a very cool program to follow all season long. And obviously never not smiling, CJ Kearse leading the way, just a crazy an awesome run. I like, just for, you know, as a Maryland alum, I watched Maryland kind of win in 2017, you know, the kind of get all the monkeys off their back since their first title since 75. Just what was it like for you, which is as an alum, seeing this team make this run, first title since 78, and having it all culminate like that?
Yeah, you're just so proud, and you know, mainly it's the guys in the team, and obviously everything they're dealing with, the coaching staff, and there's so many cool different storylines behind it. Like you said, 21 years for George, you know, you had Connor there. Jordan Stevens, best friends coaching together. You have just a great senior class that went through a lot, you know, COVID and all that, kind of delaying their start to their career. It was just great. And you're just so proud. And you tear up. I mean, I was tearing up by myself, and you know, wish I could have been there. But, you know, you have a kid like Ryan Goldstein, whose dad played and lost in back-to-back national championships at Cornell. So, like, who's more? I mean, what's better than him even winning back in the 80s? His son winning in 2025, right? I'm sure that's even a better outcome. So to have Ryan bring that home to his family when that happened, and his dad bringing guys like Joe Lizzio to the tailgates, who are doing these crazy barbecues, and just all season long they've been going from game to game, and they just kept it going, and just kind of everyone showed up with the Final Four, and like you said, it was just kind of a little bit meant to be, but the team made it happen, and they believed it. And, you know, I would text CJ, Mikey Long, and Ryan, and, you know, as excited as I would get, they would be like, more to go, you know, more to go, even like, you know, like one more to go, two more to go. They had what, you know, in their mind, what was going to happen, and they just did it. And it's just amazing. And, you know, so proud of them. And obviously just proud of Connor and Jordan. And it's cool to think that maybe you had a little bit of an impact on it through them and you know, having played with them. So
are you telling, like, watching alone? You didn't watch and talk your shit to Heacock and
Ray? Oh, we watched together, but as soon as it ended, they scattered. But so, like, they were like, you know, if we're going to lose to a team, like, we're, you know, Cornell and what you guys are about, and just there's like a respect for the program there. And yeah, Until's the Cornell guy, so they kind of appreciate what it's about. And they were like, you know, we're okay losing to you. But you know, just afterwards watching the celebration and watching the interviews is kind of when I started to get a little emotional. So, and then I got some phone calls from some people, you know, saying just, you know, wish I was there and my impact, and it just meant a lot to just get some of those phone calls, you know, later that afternoon and at night. It was just really great.
Rob, I want to jump back to the pro game for a second here. So after Saturday's press conference, you mentioned that you were really more concerned about your shooting. You know, you didn't really want to talk about assists and all that. So then we see you the next day, and, you know, you drive to the left, hit the little question mark and stick it. And we see you throw your hands up in the air. There looks like a giant relief. What's going through your head when you see that shot hit the back of the net?
Oh man, it almost like it was pure luck. Like you couldn't believe it went in. That's what it felt like. That's what my shooting, where I was at. I mean, you can ask Maggie, my fiance. She, like, that's all I talked about for 2 weeks, I think. I wish I could say like I wasn't shooting, but, you know, I'm getting up and getting my reps in. I'm shooting well, and you know, that Saturday game, I feel like I hit Kirsten in the foot three times and hit his knee, and just couldn't get one to go. And Coach Staggs is great. He's funny, and I respect the hell out of him. But what I respect about him, too, is I don't let you know. So I have him in the back of my head, like, he's gonna. So I finally made it, and I was just like, oh, thank God. Because I just, it's crazy, right? Sports are crazy. I'm 35 years old, and my 13th season as a pro, and I could still get in the slump, and I could still be mental about shooting, like, not confident. And I just needed to see one go. And it did. So it was a huge sense of relief. And I was just, you know, my shooting percentage wasn't too hot going into Sunday's game.
Are you a superstitious guy? Was there anything you tried to, you know, do differently, anything along the way?
No. No, there wasn't. I'm not. Usually when like slumps are going like that, I get back to basics. So with my own practice, like, I'm doing a bunch of question marks and just working through the footwork and making sure my stick's in the right place. And so maybe that was part of it. I mean, if you watch that goal, like, it was seamless. Like, my stick was right where it needed to be. I turned and just pushed it forward and it went where I needed it to go. So maybe it was a couple extra reps of doing that. It's usually what I get to, you know, just making sure I'm walking through things and things are kind of, the fundamentals are right. But nothing like, I didn't switch heads or change up a tape job or, no, you know, I was like, shoot your way out of it. But I also didn't want to just keep shooting. I wanted to take good shots. And maybe I should just take the passing. I don't know.
Yeah, it was cool seeing like the, you know, the montages of question mark from 2013, question mark 12 years later, looking the exact same. Like, when you perfect that thing, it is not luck. It is, in fact, a sick goal that a generation of players have been practicing in their backyards ever since your Cornell days. So, like, but I do want to dig in, Rob, to your comment of, like, you know, you're in your 13th season and you still let things get to you mentally, like, locker room wise, you know, you talked about Staggs being very direct. We talked about, you know, he's on the precipice of becoming the kind of the winningest coach in pro field lacrosse history. And there's a reason why. Like, he can be, like, very transparent with you guys. And there's been some, like, difficult lineup decisions, right? Like, we talked before the season, when you made the decision to sign with Whipsnakes, of being very open, coming out of the box and kind of adjusting your role however the staff sees fit. Like, what's the locker room dynamic been like as Stags and you guys just figure out the best kind of possible lineup, which this weekend happened to be, you know, Matt Rambo and Levi Anderson kind of swapping places on that Saturday and Sunday game.
The great thing about Stags, he's very, it communicates to everybody. So it's not like all of a sudden you're caught off guard, right? Like, in the weeks when the season starts, you know, he's talking to everybody weekly and he's letting you know, like, listen, I need more, or I need this, I need you to be doing this better. So you know where you stand. And if maybe there is a possibility that you, if you don't start to perform, that maybe you will be, you know, someone else is going to be given an opportunity. So, and then he's very direct and has the right conversations face to face. And, but, you know, I don't, the respect that everybody on the team has for him is amazing. I mean, when he's talking, everyone's, you know, dialed in, looking him in the eyes. When we have film sessions, like, everyone's on there, everyone's bought in. No one's, you know, everyone knows this to be signs a week or what I need to have blocked off. And that's the team and the culture. And, you know, we don't like to throw that word around, but it's the culture that he's created. And guys know where they stand and what could potentially happen. And guys respect the way he handles it. So if things happen, like, Matt couldn't have handled it more in a professional way. And he's shooting with Levi during the week. They're training together and he's supporting him and helping him be better. You know, Krebs with Emmett starting, right? He's on the sideline. He's on the iPad. He's supporting the team. He's making sure he's doing what he needs to be doing. I think pretty much every guy on the roster was there a whole weekend, even though they weren't part of the travel squad. So he has the right buy-in from guys. He has the ultimate respect of everybody on the team. And listen, he makes that known that this is what is expected, and he gets the right guys for it to create that right culture. And if you're not okay with that, you don't like the way things are going to be done, then you're not the right guy for the team. And I think he does an amazing job of getting the right guys.
You know, Kevin mentioned you're joining the Whipsnakes. Your previous teams, you know, were by draft or, you know, one trade. What was the experience like for you where you were kind of like, you know, hey, I'm a free agent, and kind of listening to other teams, you know, maybe talked about what they can offer for you? Like, what was that process like for you? Was it stressful to hear from them, or is it just kind of a flattering sort of thing? Or what's the situation like for the first time where teams are kind of reaching out to you?
You know, some teams were flattering. Some teams weren't. And listen, the thing I respected most out of Stags is he's like, listen, you're gonna, you know, we'd love to have you on the team, but that doesn't mean you're gonna be starting an attack. It doesn't mean you're gonna be playing midfield. But you're gonna have to come to training camp. You're gonna have to earn your spot. And I was like, I respect that. I appreciate that. Right? I don't want to be given anything. And I know he's having those conversations with everybody, whether you're your first year guy or you're a 13 year guy. And those are the conversations that we had. And we did talk about playing midfield. I think as the season got started, we continued that communication. We talk. He calls me Monday or Tuesday, you know, or Sunday, maybe depending on when the game is. And we're talking on the phone about the previous game, what can be done. All right, maybe you need to be more at X. And as you see, like, our offense has started to shift on how we're doing things. And we're getting used to playing with each other too. I mean, there's certainly an adjustment period of being on a new team, getting to know new guys. I mean, Matt Brandau is doing an amazing job of, guy's got 360 points in college as an attacker, and he's playing mid, he's playing off ball, he's catching passes in the crease. And that takes time to kind of adjust to that. So some of the conversations were good and flattering, but to be honest, like, Stags, like, told me what I wanted to hear. And I also was pretty open, being like, listen, TJ Malone, like, he's the guy. And now Aiden Carroll, right? I want to be the quarterback out there if that's needed of me, but I don't need to be the guy dodging. Like, I don't necessarily want to be in your 13. I had the had that role for a while. I had the number one defenseman for a while. I was like, let somebody else take. And those are the kind of conversations that we had. And it's a great locker room to be a part of. And Stag's a big reason for that. And it's, I'm just happy that I'm happy where I'm at.
Which, yeah, like you said, it yields to winning. And that was kind of the core mission of your free agency, right? Like, you want to compete for championships. And, you talked about this recent game being just so pivotal for you guys here at the midpoint of your season, now on a bye week, just from the difference of being 1-4 at the All-Star break and now 2-3 with, like you said, a very good score differential. It's just massive. We're talking to you on the a few days before the Redwoods homecoming series. So just what's it been like to just, go through the pressures of, having that must win game, and now fast forward, it's like, oh, this new look offense with all these young pieces are kind of the hot new thing in the league over on the West.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's everything happens for a reason, and I do believe that. Who knows what happens with the Redwoods if I stayed there, right? Do all these changes happen? Does this occur? I'm not sure. I don't think it does, actually, and I think which maybe would have worked. Maybe we would have won in that. I don't know, but I didn't. Winning was important, but I did also just think I needed a change, and the team needed a change. They needed to move on from me and just kind of maybe get some youth in there. And I'm probably the happiest person for the Redwoods right now. I love a lot of those guys on that team. I mean, Brian Tevlin, T.D. Erland, Arden Cohen, Charlie Bertrand. I've played with those guys for years. Some of them were bright since they came into the league, and I have great relationships with them. So I couldn't be happy for them. They look like they're having fun. They're playing fast. So I'm extremely happy for them, and I'm rooting for them, except when we play them. So it was certainly an interesting announcement season when we were and they were winning, right? And I'm sure the comments and the people saying things to me, but listen, you make a decision and you live with it and you go with it. And to think that our backs would have been against the wall this early for Maryland, I wouldn't have thought that, but I do know the type of character that the players on our team have, and that it's a spot that we'd be okay in and the guys would be able to handle. So
you mentioned some of those guys on the Redwoods. Your old head coach from the Lizards days, Joe Spallina, over there running the show as the GM. What has that been like? Have you gotten to reach out to him a little bit now that, welcome to the big leagues?
Yeah, it's type of thing. It's always great to see him on the weekend. I mean, Joe's always been great at putting teams together. I mean, you look at some of the rosters we had in the Lizards, the teams that he was able to somehow wheel and deal and get trades and get guys. I mean, that's what he does. He's as good at it as anybody. So, you see some of the trades he's making, the fix that he's getting, and the team that he's put together in such a short time that's having success and kind of getting the right pieces together. I'm happy for him. And he loves lacrosse, and he's the perfect guy for that role. And he knows all these young guys. He's been in it for the last 15 years with Joey going through youth lacrosse and club programs. He knows all these things. He's familiar with them. He played against them. He coached against them. So who better to now be in a position where these guys are the ones that are now year after year getting drafted that he's, his sons have played against. So, he's great. He loves to be around it. And, it's always great to see him. We got a good relationship, and, we had a lot of fun those Lizards days.
Now, Rob, you mentioned it, just having, some soreness issues around your lower body here. Just 3 weeks off, a bye week, a week in between and the All-Star break. Just what's this going to do for you the rest of the way? And just how important will this be to just the recovery?
Yeah, it did come at a really good time for me. Obviously, you could see my calf's been taped. It was kind of a cramp that turned into a minor strain down at Villanova. that I battled, you know, that game to stay in there and play. It felt like there was a baseball in there. So just to have a couple of weeks to let that settle down and loosen up and to be able to get constant PT and soft tissue on it is going to be important. You know, my hamstrings are always getting tight and nagging me. So just to give them a break. So it is good timing. And certainly, you know, when you go from the off season, you're training hard, then you go into a week of training camp, and it's a lot. And it's all guys get some nag injuries there that they really need a week or two to recover without playing. Because listen, it's pro lacrosse; it's an intense beat. So I'll make sure that I'm doing everything in these 2 weeks and, you know, 2.5 weeks before that next game in Chicago to make sure the body's right. So my 35-year-old self can continue.
Your 35-year-old self, Rob, you've spent 35 minutes with us. We appreciate the time, always. And again, rest up, and we'll catch up soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you guys having me on, as always.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Thanks again to recurring guest, Rob Pinnell, the new all-time pro field lacrosse assist leader, for joining the show. Always a pleasure having you, Rob. Thanks again. And Rosie, let's move on to the rest of week four action. You know, being right in my backyard, you had to come up from you know, a little bit further down south, but pretty local for both of us. Homewood Field. Just what'd you make of the atmosphere, the sweltering heat, dancing fans who may have done their own thing while other people stay seated? Well, what'd you make of week four in Baltimore?
I mean, I think Homewood is always a great time to watch a game. And I think the fans who came out to this one, shout out to each and every one of you, because you really had to put the work in, because it was a million degrees out there. And everybody looked miserable, but a lot of people were fighting their way through it. Congratulations to the ice cream vendors, who can probably retire off of the money they made this past weekend. Their kids are going to college worry-free. But generally, yeah, it was a great atmosphere. It was the first time. It was a little bit different from previous ones, right? It was the first time there wasn't the whole Hall of Fame kind of surrounding. They're going to be doing that in Chicago later. So it was kind of just standing on its own. But yeah, the games were engaging and fun, and not as many nail biters. You know, we did have the Maryland Boston game that was very close, and they had a, you know, huge, valiant comeback attempt that fell just short for the Whipsnakes there. So that's obviously something that's intriguing to watch. But also, sometimes it is also captivating to watch a team just kind of get their teeth kicked in. Right, you know, watching a team firing on all cylinders, and sometimes that's interesting in another way. And so we got to see both ends of it. You know, Saturday night's games end with the nail biter. Sundays end with the, you know, straight up mollywhopping, if you will. And we got the best of both worlds.
You know, you could have been talking about the opening game of week four as well. A little bit of a whooping on the Water Dogs. You know, I went back and forth. Yeah, who's that? It's never a big deal. So I do the power rankings for Inside Lacrosse, and this exercise is mostly just so I can write about all eight teams in one roundup article per se. And, you know, Rosie, as you mentioned in the wrap up, fans can go read that on insidelacrosse.com. Like, yeah, just another awesome showcase for the extreme parity in this league, sans Carolina, and so far, at least. The fact that, so to kind of tie my whole point together, of the Water Dogs, ranking them first was completely just writing off their second loss, or second game during their homecoming weekend, where, each team before them had lost their second leg of the doubleheader at home. They do the same. It's just what happens. But then second straight game, not getting the double digits. All right, well, this also may have just seemed like a classic Atlas. What, their backs were more against the wall, and they were hungrier. And we saw that with the Whip Snakes and Chaos, too. Like, the Whips could not fall down to 1-4 on the season. 2-3, much better. Chaos still figuring things out, incorporating new pieces into the lineup. And blowouts occur. Kind of the best game of the weekend, you mentioned that near comeback bid. And then the Bernhardt breakout game, we will get to. But Rosie, let's stick to that first game first. The kind of media narrative going into this one was the number one versus number two a few drafts ago, with Jeff Teat and Michael Sowers being a key storyline for this one. Like, coming off of a reigning MVP season, coming off, you know, seasons where Sowers may not have had a full healthy campaign each time. He's getting knocked around, but, you know, he's the one with the ring. You have to respect that. Jeff Teat is the one with the MVP. We also have to respect that. Rosie, where do you lie now that Jeff Teat has stamped his presence back on the rest of the PLL after, you know, kind of a slower start to the season? 5 goals, 3 assists against Philly to be like, hey, build your team around me, Rosie.
You know, it's funny when you watch them, because obviously they both have the exact same job description, right? But they do those jobs in such tremendously different ways that it makes it kind of, it's difficult to compare, but it's also easy to compare because they're so different. I think what we saw from Jeff Teat in this game was just his ability to kind of dissect the situations in front of him and adjust accordingly. You know, he looks like he's always calculating something. You don't really see him as often just like sprinting as quickly as he can and, you know, constantly roll dodging and looking to see if something opens up. He spends a lot more time kind of sidestepping and backpedaling. Honestly, I have no idea how fast Jeff Teat is. I have no idea what top speed for Jeff Teat even is. I don't know if I've ever seen it or if I see it all the time. I got no clue. He just kind of does, he shuffles and keeps his hands free, and then he, you know, just kind of slices your defense apart. Michael Sowers' game is obviously much different because he can make it much different. And, you know, if we all had the ability to be quicker than every other human, we would use that quickness, right?
You know how fast he is.
Yes, we have seen top speed for Michael Sowers because he'll just do something and we'll just say, what on earth was that he just did? So I think the difference between the two, what we might see is, you know, we've seen situations where Jeff Teat will have, you know, 1 point or 2 points, and at least how it's discussed, and maybe this is our fault for discussing it this way, it will say, oh, okay, well, he understood that the assignment for him was take a step back and let the rest of the offense function, right? Maybe that's the appropriate amount of credit to give him. Maybe it's more than we should. But for example, like when they play Maryland and he's got Matt Dunn on him, at least the train of thought is, okay, well, the rest of the team is going to be better off if Matt Dunn is 8 yards away from the rest of the slide packages. And that's going to mean, you know, your fantasy team is going to suck because Jeff Teat's going to get your 1 point, but the Atlas offense is going to function very well. Conversely, we see a Michael Sowers situation where he kind of has to make these things happen. And it looks like the situation we saw this past week, if he has 3 points, maybe that's not going to be enough. You know, maybe Taylor's not going to get a hat trick if you're not seeing the second and third slides get forced because Michael Sowers is going to make that happen. So, you know, the question is like, who's better or something like that? They both do very different things. But I think if, you know, if Jeff Teat you know, like sprains an ankle or something like that, I think he would probably still be a bit more functional than Michael Sowers in the same situation. Do you have if you had a draft and you were going to pick one or another, would you go one way or another right now, you think?
Yeah, I've always been a Sowers guy. This is no disrespect on T. It's just, you know, it's partially like I thought he was going to go first to the Atlas. I'm sticking to my guns kind of deal. Like, you know, like he is unguardable. But to your point, like, is that your preference of like, all right, if T gets injured, like maybe he's a little more, he can do a little more with that?
Yeah, you know, I think like if you have like a college team, you know, and you're going to have this set amount of time and your set window, you have your 3 years or your 4 years, then, you know, maybe you just go Sowers and you say, nobody is going to figure out how to stop this and we'll put some people around him, you know? I wonder how the rest of this season's going to go. It's tricky now that we saw these two games of super dominance by this offense and then these two games of relative quiet for them. You know, you wonder how much of it is an exhaustion kind of thing and how much of it is, oh, our defense is starting to talk and figuring something out that's going to take away other people. Maybe they've reassessed the timing that they use with these slides and, you know, how to neutralize the team a little bit more. It seems too early to say, okay, the Water Dogs are done, you know, because we've seen them do so much in 50% of the season. But I feel like PLL, you can't help but take super huge swings when it comes to, you know, diagnosing things, right? Because we only have these 10 games and we have a whole week in between all this time. You say, okay, well, here's what I just saw. Apparently that's the truth now. So maybe T on a mediocre day is higher up than Sowers on a mediocre day. That might be something I would offer as a negotiation.
Yeah,
Sowers discussion.
Very fair. The mediocre Jeff Teat of 2024 was elite for everyone else. And yeah, man, like Water Dogs, Redwoods, this upcoming week is going to be sick. Teat and the Atlas have the Archer. So yeah, we just keep plugging away. Like it's funny. Each podcast we record, I'm like, oh my God, these matchups. But these are sick. So it's and to kind of address some of the online social fire, like TV being down, kind of have run into some tricky attendance situations with obviously the extreme heat this weekend, the Albany rainstorms opening weekend. Can't control the weather, can't control when you bring each tour stop to each particular city. Of course, that is done well in advance. And they're building more kind of relational in-community ties to each stop to the league is working to get to each homecoming stop, you know, a few weeks before and bring some kind of community to it and relate them to their team that way with some different initiatives. So we'll see the long-term effects of that seasons to come. And really just the question becomes, how long do we have this tour-based model in a year where it's a TV contract year for the league and how important that is? So, but Rosie, one thing that will be good for TV contracts is Jared Barnhart running out of the box a million miles an hour. Just like the sheer speed of Sowers behind the net is one thing, but when you like add however many more inches to those ankle sock wearing legs that Jared Barnhart had for that backhand goal to open the scoring on Sunday, it's pretty insane. And then you see how he took over in that second half. Denver scores the last eight on Utah. Bernhard, a big reason why, 4 goals and assists in his best PLL game yet. Rosie, what do you think of the Bernhard breakout?
You know, I think we're just continuing to see kind of what, not what we expected early on. I don't think it was reasonable to assume that anybody would take that many years off of playing lacrosse and come back and just instantly dominate against people who've been playing lacrosse every day of their lives while he's been gone. But there is the matter of speed, and that, you know, it's not like he retired from physical activity. He just retired from lacrosse, right? So from he gets on the, yeah, it gets on the wall a little bit, you know, has some catch, kind of, you know, dials in the one, maybe, you know, checks the shooters a little bit, and things seem to be going much better for him. And, you know, all the efforts that it took for Sudo to bring him over to the organization really looks like it's paying off in a game like that, where he's going against, you know, not only a conference opponent, but, you know, the guys who beat them last year for the, you know, number one seed in the Western Conference, and of course the defending champions as well. You know, it's definitely one of those games where you kind of, if you're the Outlaws, you go into that game thinking, well, this is how we see what we're really made of, because these are probably the guys we'll need to get by to get the championship. And, you know, on a day where Brendan O'Neill is 0-for-13, I want to say, still finding success is just, you know, previously you would think, okay, well then, well, that's an L. We're just going to just take that loss and go. But yeah, if you're, plan B is somebody with the Jerry Bernhard attributes or Pat Cavanaugh attributes, and you don't have to worry about, you know, somebody like a Brendan O'Neill having a quiet game, and you still understand everybody else can step up around him, that makes Denver look super dangerous right now.
Yeah, close, 0-for-10, 2 assists for O'Neill. Hasek totally locked him up.
0-for-13 when they played last year.
That's gotcha. Gotcha.
Oh, for his last 23 against Hasek and the Archers.
So not great. Not great for O'Neill, who his breakout game came against the Archers when Graham Hasek and was doing who knows what in chopping down trees in the forest. I think you wrote in an article. That made me chuckle, and, you know, it's kind of cool to see, you know, that last year was the O'Neill breakout. Poor Mr. Horn Jeffrey, sorry to have you keep catching strays from that game. And then Jared Bernhard breaking out in this game against the same team. Very cool. Just like you mentioned, like, he was never going to lose that athleticism. It was going to take more time to get those stick skills back, and I think he showed that the stick skills have always been there from game one. It's more so just the shooting and the confidence and his shot. Like, some of these goals are still not, like, very attractive goals. The backhander, sweet. All the other ones, like, bouncers near side or, like, kind of just, like, off-putting Dobson in a way that he's, like, wait, I thought you were, like, a good shooter, man. Like, how are you not putting these in the corners? And I'm, like, moving out of the way. Lefty jumper down the alley near side. Pretty good placement, far pipe on the EMO strike, playing catch with a calf. And then, yeah, what was that last one? He had another one in there, and I'd venture to guess it wasn't that great either, you know? The question mark move for his first PLL goal in Villanova was the one I was thinking of, where he goes near side, and it's like, you know, that wasn't that great either. It's like,
right.
DeLuca probably wasn't expecting it to go there, so it's a scary thought, you know? Like, he's still shaking off the rust. He's still trying to get the shooting strings dialed. And he's still going 4-for-8, 50%. Pretty dangerous with that outlaw offense. And when Mike Manley, Jesse Bernhard are on their game, JT Giles-Harris, I think, is in contention for one of the best defensemen so far this season. This is a tough team to beat, Rosie. And with that, I wanted to switch over to our next segment, which is talking about our All-Star Game ballots. Rosie, voting closed Monday night. Dangerously early in this PLL season. So these are mid-season selections. Only the Whipsnakes have played 5 games. We've got some differences. We're going to hash them out here. Rosie, let's go position by position, starting with the Eastern Conference. At attack, I've got Michael Sowers, TJ Malone, and you've got
Same too. Michael Sowers and TJ Malone.
No disagreement there. I've got Brian Cosbiel and Brad Smith.
We are so far one for one. I mean, one and one there. I actually have the same. Cosbiel was kind of up in the air for me until this past weekend when he just kind of lit the place up. I had some honorable mention, Matt Traynor and Thomas McConvey earlier in my previous talent assessment for the All-Stars. But yeah, I think Cosbiel earned it.
Two-pointers, man. Very, very sick. Owen Grant, Matt Dunn, my defenders.
I've got Owen Grant as well, but, and no disrespect to Matt Dunn, but I do have Kenny Brower in my second spot there.
He's been a stud. Very close. Not going to argue that one too much. These are positions where it's going to be 3 on the field, so...
Right.
We're allowed to have a 3-inner ballot maybe in the future. Joe Nardella was my face-off man, and Liam Entman was my goalie. I think we agreed there, right?
I have Liam Entman, but I put Baptiste there.
Baptiste.
Really can't argue against Nardella, right? I mean, it's just kind of...
Yeah, the head-to-head was...
Yeah. I think you're splitting hairs either way. Like, you know, if you leave... Baptiste. Basically, long story short, I think they're both going to be there. So, you know, I think they'll both.
I have a hunch you'll be right. Dylan Malloy over the Western Conference, the resurgent season for him at attack with Connor Fields is my 2.
Fields is a good call. I did not have him. I did have Malloy, but I had Chris Kavanaugh lined up with him.
The Rook.
Yeah,
slide all the way down to 10, and he's an All-Star game starter for Rosie. Love it. Now, they make it pretty easy voting on the PLL site, and you see all their stats compared. I wish I took screenshots of that, but, like, Fields has kind of tapered off last few games, facilitated this last one pretty nicely to 3 assists. I had that hat trick against the Whips, just worked, I think, 3 in a row and 4 total, maybe, against the Whips in that opener. Anyway, it's definitely splitting hairs in a very much 3-position grouping again. Any other guys you considered over Cav, or is he kind of your...
No, you know, I was a little hesitant at first because I was wondering if I was going to stack it too many... with one team, but this past weekend I think things kind of shook out a little bit better for me. So no, I was just happy with Kavanaugh's production and of course his fun ability as well, which is always important. Tiebreaker for me, if we're making All-Stars, who do I actually want to see in the game who is likely to do something nasty? And Connor Fields is certainly up there, you know, certainly not Connor Fields erasure. When I was making this list, I said, oh, you know what? I want to see Chris Kavanaugh throw some more nonsense in there like he did to get on SportsCenter.
Speaking of guys I want to see at the All-Star Game festivities, one of the best players in the world, Tom Shriver, has to be there, always producing per usual, couple game winners this season, needs to be a starter. And Jared Bernhardt, after one great game, 2 shaking off the Russ games. I need to see him there. I need to see him blowing past long pole matchups and see if they get mad at him in a All-Star game setting.
Yeah, I mean, having these votes take place when they take place, it's really, you know, you kind of leave it up to the fans to say, well, what's important to you? Like, will you base it on, you know, the last weekend you saw him? Base it on the first weekend you saw him? Like, you know, obviously Sowers gets a lot more votes from the first couple weekends. Bernhardt gets some heavy votes based on this last weekend. So, yeah, no, I did not have him in my lineup, but I'm not mad at it. I went Schreiber and Andrew McAdory.
Which, speed for speed, pretty exciting if we can get both of them on the same Western Conference line and see them going to work. Maybe they can do a little give-and-go action with Shriver. He, like, tosses a around-the-world skip pass to him through, like, six guys where they didn't even expect Bernhardt to just, like, dart 20 yards to the back fight. Little play call for you.
Would you try the air gate again, or do you think after you try it the first time and don't succeed, do you just throw it out of the bag?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of want to do it during a game. And this is a fun game. You know, you got to try it. And because of that, you got to one-up it. And you got to do the Mikey Powell across the back of the net version instead and just totally make your body parallel with the field leaping across the back. No air gate allowed for Mr. Bernhardt. You have to do Mikey Powell instead. Going on to defense, going with Giles Harris. I've loved his body of work. And a guy I'm proud of for, Troy Ray. I think just his versatility and, you know, playing that off-ball role, shutting down Holman in that chaos win, or shutting down Xander Dickson, sorry, in that chaos win over the Alice, and just being a GB machine. Let's get him an All-Star game.
I'm not mad at that at all. Troy Ray constantly deserves more recognition and accolades for his body of work. I went with Graham Hossack, who, you know, just very quietly goes out there and dominates, not super flashy. So, you know, not necessarily what you want to see in an All-Star game, but, you know, I think he'll show up and do his job nicely. Somebody you do want to see in an All-Star game, I think, is Jack Rowlett, who never hesitates to throw over the head checks. You know, he's probably got some kayaks just sitting in the back pocket that he doesn't try in actual games because he's worried about giving up positioning. So, you know, what is he willing to throw when the score doesn't actually matter that much? And, you know, obviously we'll get him mic'd up as well. So anytime you can get Jack Rowlett in a game, I am watching that game.
Eastern Conference opponent or attackman do not want to see Hossack, I bet. Maybe fans don't either. Like, maybe let's get the scoring up for a showcase
true.
Game, I guess. But lovers of defense will argue, of course, differently. At face-off, T. Erlin, the best in the West at that position, and Brett Dobson was my goalie.
I went Erlin as well, and instead of Brett Dobson, who I'm going to let go home and rest that ankle, I am putting in Logan Rainey. After 2 weeks, but two fantastic weeks and 1 week of just shutting down the Utah Archers for almost 20 minutes of gameplay, go on in, Rook. Why don't you start yourself an All-Star game?
Now, the All-Star game, going to be exciting. That's also a good excuse just to mention how great McNaney has been these first three games. Like 14 saves, 16 saves. He now leads the West in save percent. Leads the league? Rosie, quick fact check. And he's been awesome. You know, just playing in front of his D coordinator now. They're joking all around. Just about him being super old in college, and now he's the young buck in this league. awesome stuff from just the all-time great college goalie, all-time saves leader for Maryland, mind you.
And yes, he does presently lead the league with a 63.8% save percentage ahead of Austin Kaut, which probably shouldn't count, with 62.5, and Brett Dobson with the starters with 60.6.
Dobson, of course, has played in a couple more games, but will be fun to revisit all these, Rosie, at the end of the season when we kind of do our all-pro kind of ballots and what have you. Rosie, moving on. Week 5, we're pumped. Torero Stadium, host of the 2023 World Lacrosse Championship. Just an unbelievable venue. Excited to see how many people make it out there. Rosie, what is your favorite matchup this weekend?
My favorite matchup of this weekend is going to be Friday night's final game, Utah Archers versus New York Atlas. First and foremost, this puppy starts at 11:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Oh, baby.
It is the latest game on the docket for the entire year. And I am here for PLL After Dark. After Dark, this is going to be testing many of the East Coast people.
Yeah, us East Coast elitists are in shambles.
That's right. Those of us who are washed and have to take kids to soccer practice at 7 in the morning are going to be going through it. But there's going to be a lot of people brave in this game, and I cannot wait to see what happens. Archers, like I just mentioned, got shut out for last 1955 of their previous game this past weekend. They are kind of dealing with some things. Got to get some scoring. Offensive production has not really been there this year. And conversely, you look at the New York Atlas, who just kind of steamrolled the Water Dogs this past weekend. So, I mean, they're both at 2-2. You want to see if they can keep this going, if Utah can kind of put their foot on the brake and turn it around, head into the All-Star break with a big sort of statement win over a team that just looked really strong. And, you know, see if the Atlas can keep things going or risk falling off once again before the break.
Rosie, ran the gamer for this. It is pretty startling that the scriptwriter just totally gave the blueprint to the Outlaws, that they gave the Whip Snakes the week prior. Like, 8-0 runs to end both these games. Of course, just a lot different stuff going into both, but now they face each other. Gonna be an exciting one for sure. My favorite game for week 5 is going to be that Dogs Woods game that I mentioned earlier in the podcast to start Saturday's action at 6 p.m. East Coast time. This is the ESPN game this weekend, so get your cable ready for this one and your ESPN Plus ready for all the other ones. Sowers, Kavanaugh Malloy. We got just a rebuilding team, maybe surpassing expectations early versus the year 2 Bill Tierney experience. Let's see how well they can do until their number one pick is ready and healthy. Like, just a lot of fun storylines that, you know, the Water Dogs, I think, asserted themselves in those first couple wins. Now, how do they do to kind of rewrite this narrative of the home team? Like, how much are we going to keep writing off their second game? I know the players don't want to make excuses for themselves, but it's certainly not an advantage for being at home. Disadvantage being in front of your fans, but playing two games aspect for maybe chemistry is the only argument, but just the fresher team being the Water Dogs and having them being hungry. Really excited to see how the Woods responded to that after a really tough test against Denver to start week 5.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how much we will overreact if the Water Dogs drop another one, if that offense.
Well, how about if the Woods drop both? Really two tough home opponents here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's always tough to kind of preview these home stands because you never know what's going to happen in that first game, right? If they're 3-1, feeling really good with a big win over an Outlaws team that has looked fantastic, you know, then they come strutting into Saturday night's game, you know, probably feeling pretty confident about themselves. Or they're going to perhaps find themselves kind of crawling across the finish line and being in a whole sort of mess of doubting themselves if they get stomped in the first game. So we'll see. Or maybe they do what Maryland does and rally over a little bit of a loss. You know, they've presented that as another option now, that sometimes maybe you can rally around your mistakes.
SoCal Nation, show out, show us a good time for week five. Really pumped to see these games, Rosie, and always a pleasure talking shop with you yet again. Thanks again, Rob Pinnell, for joining the podcast. And thank you, listeners, for listening to yet another PLL Happy Hour podcast. If you like what you heard, we'll be back here next week with more for Inside Lacrosse podcast.